the TuneIn Radio app,
the iHeartRadio app,
and nccradio.org.
This is 90.3 WHPC.
WHPC HD. Garden City.
Long Island.
New York. Five p.m. Looks like it's about 9:30 outside p.m., but it is 5 p.m. It's shortest day of the year today. Time for American Air Radio on 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host Tom Ryan. Very glad to be here with my lovely wife and co-host Heidi Morales Ryan as well. Playing with the faders there, as you can tell, as our theme song fades away. Fridays we've been covering the band The Who for 3 months now. This is show number 12 that we are about to delve into, following their career in a chronological order. And we are in the year 1969. Last year, we covered the first half of the album Tommy. Today, we need to finish that up. This is a simple but important show in The Who's history because the album Tommy not only salvaged The Who's career, it also made them millionaires and superstars. It provided the band with a live project that reinvigorated their career and gave singer Roger Daltrey an identity that stuck with him for the rest of his life. They may have created better work, but none can compare to the influence and the impact of the album Tommy. Now, to get into it, I haven't read much lately from Pete Townshend's autobiography, Who I Am. But here's a few excerpts from his autobiography regarding the Tommy project. The Tommy tracks were well-engineered with conservative, tight drum and bass sounds and great acoustic keyboard and vocal sounds, but the electric rhythm guitars sounded poor. I felt I had two great strengths as a studio musician. I was a good acoustic guitar player and electric rhythm guitar player. But IBC recording studios had no isolation booth, so when making backing tracks, I couldn't really play acoustic guitar along with Keith and John. They were too loud. Kit had persuaded me to cover any proposed acoustic part with a thin, low-volume electric guitar, which I planned to replace with a killer combination of full-bodied acoustic guitar and driving electric rhythm guitar. Unfortunately, this never happened. So if you ever thought that Tommy sounded a bit thin, there's your reason. I was working in my home studio on February 1st, 1969, when I got a call from Delia de Leon to tell me that Meher Baba had dropped his body. And would I be attending a special meeting that evening at the Soho Center? The meeting was to discuss how his sudden death would affect plans for a planned public gathering. Baba had been ill, so his death wasn't unexpected, but it was still a terrible shock. I had been planning to go to India with McInerney's, who is the person responsible for introducing Pete to Meher Baba, and also the same person responsible for doing the artwork for the cover of the album Tommy, which was mostly dedicated to Meher Baba. With Ronnie and Susie Lane. That's Ronnie Lane of the Small Faces. Karen, his wife, in her final month of pregnancy, planned to stay behind. We hadn't been able to meet Meher Baba, but had followed him since 1967, and I was upset now that we'd missed our chance. Under the deadline hammer on Tommy, we canceled our tickets to India that morning with mixed feelings of disappointment and relief. The next day, when The Who played live, I was still numb from the Meher Baba news. Three of the road crew joined me in the Volvo for the drive back to London. It was a long journey, and there was an eerie silence throughout. While writing songs, I made a huge leap into the absurd when I decided that the hero would play pinball while still deaf, dumb, and blind. It was daft, flawed, and muddled, but also insolent, liberated, and adventurous. I had no doubt whatsoever that if I had failed to deliver The Who, an operatic masterpiece that would change people's lives, with Pinball Wizard, I was giving them something almost as good, a hit. Tommy hadn't been intended as a pop album. My new definition of what I did was rock. And musicians and journalists were starting to use the word to describe a youth movement and an attitude, as well as the favored popular music of the day. The problem was to work out what the function of Tommy would be now that Meher Baba was gone. I had never intended for Tommy to be a proselytizing vehicle for Meher Baba, but it was certainly intended to reflect spiritual yearnings during these post-psychedelic times. Youth movements were dividing and polarizing into two camps, political activists and spiritual seekers, and I saw myself in the latter. We discussed whether Baba's name should be credited on the sleeve and agreed that it should, but merely as Avatar. If the naive, workmanlike songs I wrote immediately before Tommy had been hits, I might never have felt the need to try something else. I might have kept my operatic ambitions private. There's nothing I admire more than a collection of straightforward songs, linked in mood and theme only by a common, unspecified artistic thesis. But the pretentiousness of Tommy was necessary. Without its audacity and cheek to attract both attention and opprobrium, I believe The Who would have eventually disappeared or became irrelevant. In any case, I enjoyed writing the songs, serving a brief. It's how I had begun. It seemed to work for me, and the result was songs that might otherwise not have been written. After Tommy, every collection of songs I submitted for a Who album was inspired by an idea, a story, or concept that had some kind of dramatic shape and form. Not always evident, but always there. Absolutely always there. When I first heard the double album, I was a little taken aback. Kit had remixed the entire album so that the band was very low behind the vocals, and some tracks seemed to lack the punch I knew they had delivered in the studio. But the collection hung together better, and after a few listens, I decided Kit had taken the correct approach. The story behind Tommy was fairly easy to follow, and the sleeve would contain the words as well as sensational pictures. Practically every lyric line could be clearly heard in the mix, and this, after all, was the whole point. Mike McInerney's sleeve design was a triumph. It added mystery and coherence, a seemingly impossible combination. Printed up and held in hand, it was an object of beauty, as well as an elucidation. Well, last week I said we played the first half and a little bit more than that, talking about the summary of the story. I'll pick up the summary now from where we're about to pick up right now. A doctor notices that Tommy appears to be communicating, at least with himself, via the mirror in which he witnessed the murder. His mother, utterly frustrated, smashes the mirror, awakening the boy from his catatonic reverie. Part two of Tommy sees the hero turned into a messiah as the story of his miracle cure hits the tabloids. Tommy founds his own religion and becomes the object of blind devotion. The mercenary rapist Uncle Ernie sets up Tommy's holiday camp to exploit those desperate to reach the same level of spiritual awareness that Tommy has achieved. Irritated by his fans, Tommy moves the goalposts, making any shortcut to Nirvana almost impossible. His followers rise up and reject him. We're not going to take it. Tommy is abandoned by everyone, isolated but utterly self-aware. He finds himself in much the same place he was right at the very beginning of the story. Then let's pick it up, and we'll play a few tracks then from the second half of Tommy.
There's a man I found could bring us all joy. There's a doctor I found could cure the boy. A doctor I found can cure the boy. There's a man.
He Tommy.
Turning point of the story then as Tommy smashes the mirror and suddenly his senses return to him in that exact instant as the story goes. Of course, when the album was done, The Who had to go out and play it live. And at first, that looked like that was going to be a problem to play an entire opera. It's rather interesting. So again, I'll pick this up from the book that was put out by Richard Barnes called The Who, Maximum R&B. The first time Tommy was played to an audience was when they booked Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club in Soho for a press reception to launch the album. They played the whole thing straight through at incredible volume to the amazed journalists. Pete, first of all, introduced the work and gave a small explanation of the story. It changes all the time. It goes, "It's about a boy who was born normal, just like you and me. He is later raped by his uncle and gets turned on to LSD. He said to applause that it was not sick, contrary to what one hears on anti-BBC. This was a reference to BBC Radio's Tony Blackburn, who described Pinball Wizard as sick. Pete's reply to a burst of applause was, "I think anti is the sickest thing in this country." Chris Welch of Melody Maker said that 20 hours after the event, his ears were still ringing. He talked of The Who having calmed down. "Even if they have, they can still scare you. There were moments during Tommy when I had to clutch the table for support. I felt my stomach contracting and my head spinning, but we wanted more." There were two basic reactions. Many papers, like the NME, agreed with anti-BBC and thought it was, quote, sick. Pretentiousness is too strong a word. Maybe overambition is the right term, but sick certainly does apply. The other reaction was summed up by the headline in Disc, "Who's Tommy? A Masterpiece." Disc said that it was, quote, "probably the first significant attempt to use pop as a truly dramatic medium. The biggest danger facing something as ambitious as and serious as Tommy was that it would be seen at the very least as self-conscious. The Daily Mirror's pop columnist Don Short had called it pretentious." In response to this, Pete surprisingly laughed and said, "He's dead bloody right it is." Then let's get back to the pretentious rock opera Tommy. Starting with, okay, the mirror breaks. You now hear Tommy beginning to come aware of his sensations.
Make your love's cold breath inside. Lovers break, caress.
She had to try, but he couldn't see through the lights. Her face was gashed and the ambulance man had to carry her out that night. The crowd went crazy as Tommy left the stage. Little Sally was lost for the price of a touch and a gash across her face. Mother said, never mind, your part is to be what you'll be.
Interesting story here is that both of the main songs that we heard there predate the idea of Tommy as being a rock opera at all. The first song, Sensation, Pete wrote when he was in Australia. He had met a girl who was a follower of Meher Baba, and he actually was falling in love with her and considered calling off his marriage or breaking up his marriage over this girl. And he wrote Sensation because of that relationship, because he couldn't believe that he basically, here he is, following what he considers to be an obscure, you know, leader that was going to be giving him inspiration, and he meets this girl who he falls in love with, who knew all about him. She had a badge, and when he mentioned his name, she goes, "Oh, look!" And she took out her badge. He's like, "Oh, this is impossible." He came back prepared to break up, and when he got home, his wife basically already knew about it because she had intercepted the letter. And Pete decided that it was for the best to let things be exactly as they were, but that was haunting him at that point in time, and the song Sensation comes from that. Sally Simpson also comes from a situation where the Who were playing with the Doors, and he witnessed a girl who was climbing to the stage get thrown and end up getting cut very badly during the Doors performance. And Pete wrote that song with no intention of it, originally anyway, of being used for the rock opera, until he realized, oh, that could be one of Tommy's fans getting hurt in the process. So there you go. That's Sensation and Sally Simpson. Let's let it play out from here. Well, you hear the rest of the opera uninterrupted from this point till the end, the conclusion of Tommy.
We'll be right back. one of the comfortable people. Lovely bright home, we're drinking all night, never sleeping. Milkman, come in, and you bake up. Victoria Station. Go into that hospital and bring the nurses and patients. Everyone go home and fetch their relations. Come to this house, be one of the comfortable people. Lovely bright home, drinking all night, never sleeping. Colorful palace, spare no expense now. Come to this house, be one of us. Come into this house, be one of us. To this house.
to the camp. I guess you all know why we're here. My name is Tommy, and I became aware this year. If you want to follow me, you've got to play pinball. And put in your earplugs, put on your eye shades, you know where to put the cork. Hey, you smoking Mother Nature, this is a bust. Hey, hung up old Mr. Normal, don't try to gain my trust. Cause you ain't gonna follow me any of those ways, although you think you must.
Forget it, better still.
Now you can hear me, your ears are truly sealed. You can't speak either, your mouth is filled. You can't see nothing, and pinball completes the scene. Here comes Uncle Ernie to guide you to your very own machine.
We're not gonna take it. 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 We're not gonna take it.
Never did and never will. We're not gonna
there it is as it fades into the distance. Tommy in its entirety over 2 weeks on 90.3 WHPC. The show is American Hit Radio. What's the name of my show? the Friday version, How Music Changed, where we
cover specific artists.
It's been very interesting to cover The Who. I find this has been a fascinating thing. That The Who album, by the way, the Tommy album by The Who, has sold 20 million copies so far and counting. Amazing. That's not counting the London Symphony Orchestra version that was released. That's not counting the movie soundtrack version that was released. That's not taking into account the Broadway version that had existed. It just went on and on and on and on. With the time that is left, what I want to do for a little fun treat for fans of The Who, something that maybe a lot of people aren't familiar with. There was a lot of demos that were made for the album. Some of them are for tracks that never even made it onto the album. Others are tracks that did, but they exist quite a bit different in demo form, or they just impressed the heck out of me. So I assembled a few of them, and I figured I'll just let them play now. Tracks you're going to hear have titles like I Was, very short bit. It's a Boy demo, also short. Christmas, very interesting, but short. The Pinball Wizard demo is amazing. We're going to go into another track called Dream One. There's a new one. The Hawker, a bit of that. And Success, finally, with Trying to Get Through, another song that didn't make the cut. So I hope you enjoy this. Take care, everybody, and have a great holiday weekend. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
It's
Success. I think we have success. I think we have success.
Is brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs, with two locations in Uniondale and Carl Place, both within a 5-minute drive of Nassau Community College, and also available with Uber Eats. Jersey Mike's is a sub shop where every slice, every sandwich, and every store provides sustenance and substance. Produce is sliced daily in-house. Bread is baked daily in-house. And the 100% Angus beef roast beef is cooked in-store. Experience the sub difference at Jersey Mike's in Uniondale and Carl Place.
Hi, I'm Rob Leonard, host of Beatles Songs for the past 24 years right here on WHPC. Beatles Songs airs every Friday from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., playing the music of the Beatles together, apart, along with Beatle cover songs and songs the Beatles covered, along with songs a Beatle either guested on and or produced. And of course, we provide Beatle news. It's not the same show where they play the same 10 songs. So join me every Friday for Beatles Songs, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on 90.3 WHPC.